The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Raleigh News and Observer, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, Garden Smart e-newsletter, state-by-state gardening website, HGTV's Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from Great Gardening Gizmos by Rodale. And we'll start with HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter. This article is titled, Clever Ways to Start Seeds by Jessica Yonker. Get growing with these fun, inexpensive seed starting projects. From eggshells to pots to paper towels, you can start your seasonal veggies, herbs, and flowers in containers you have lying around the house. Sunflower people turn old paint cans into delightful characters that greet your family throughout the summer. And you do it by painting bodies onto the cans, and the sunflowers become the people. Funny seed starters. After the kids finish reading the Sunday comics, help them create newspaper seed pots that can be planted directly into the ground. Fold the comic strips up and around the outside of a small glass to make a miniature pot. Then remove the glass. Add soil and seeds. Keep the paper pots in a tray near a sunny window until it's warm enough to plant outside. Reuse seed trays. Recycle last year's seedlings trays and flats to start seeds. Just starting out? Most garden centers and stores sell trays for low prices, but don't be afraid to ask your garden-savvy neighbors if they have extras lying around. Use small pots. Small pots are great for large seeds like beans, peas, or squash that require fewer plants in your garden. Make sure to turn pots sitting in windowsills so seedlings grow evenly. Try cardboard tubes. Try using old toilet paper or paper towel tubes for a budget seed starting option. Gayla Trail, HGTV contributor and garden authority, recommends using old cardboard tubes for starting finicky plants that don't transplant well, like beans, sunflower, and dill. Start seeds in old food containers. Use recycled drink cartons or plastic tubs filled with potting soil to grow a variety of spring salad crops. Just make sure the cartons have drainage holes in the bottom. Don't throw out your lunch container. Poke holes in freshly washed plastic containers and fill with soil to start leafy greens, herbs, and veggies. If you have the proper conditions, a warm, sunny windowsill, you can even continue to grow herbs and salad greens indoors. A milk jug living wall. Old milk and juice jugs can be used to start seeds and even create a mini greenhouse by cutting into the jug to fashion a vessel with a hinged lid. Make a homemade propagator. A propagator creates a humid environment that seeds need to germinate. Instead of buying one, make one at home with an old 2-liter bottle. And clean eggshells are another useful biodegradable seed starting container for small herbs and flowers. Use a needle or a pin to poke holes in the bottom of the egg for drainage before sowing the seeds. Water carefully and closely as the eggshell pots can dry out quickly if left unattended. During late winter, Try forcing daffodil bulbs in eggshells for a fun display that blooms just in time for Easter. And use dollar store finds. A deep plastic tub from the toy aisle is great for starting root vegetables like beets. Make sure to thin out the seedlings to allow enough room for the roots to grow properly. Don't forget about tubers. Early and main crop potatoes can be sprouted inside before planting it in the garden. This process is known as chitting. Arrange undamaged potatoes with eyes uppermost in egg boxes or seed trays in light in a cool but frost-free room. Sow seeds on a paper towel. Damp paper towels, napkins, and coffee filters can all be used to germinate seeds or even test if seeds are viable. Just place seeds on a damp paper towel, place in a plastic bag, and store in a cool, dark place to encourage rapid growth. Once the seedlings sprout, transfer them into loose potting soil. Now, junk mail seed bombs. Get rid of that stack of old mail and newspapers with this easy seed bomb project. Paper pulp filled with wildflower seeds are easy for young gardeners to make and are also great gifts. What you will need: junk mail straight from the shredder. Limit your choices to the non-glossy variety. Water, an immersion blender, and wildflower seeds specific to your region. Shred your junk mail or tear it into small pieces. Then, soak it in warm water to soften. Blend with an immersion blender. Shreds become paper pulp until the shreds become paper pulp. Then, strain with a sieve to remove excess water. Sprinkle seeds into the pulp, mix well, shape into balls, and let dry. Or you can make seed paper. Make your own seed paper. It takes the fun out of spacing. Simply glue seeds onto strips of toilet paper or a paper towel and roll it up on the leftover cardboard tube until it's time to plant. What you'll need: tweezers, that's optional, a ruler, marker, toilet paper, paper towels or napkins, an all-purpose glue, and seeds. Measure out a length of, say, toilet paper. If the planting row will be narrow and straight, cut the paper in half lengthwise. Consult the packet of seeds to find out how far apart the seeds should be planted. Then, use a marker or pen to mark each spot where a seed will go. Next, add a dot of glue to each mark. Pour the seeds out onto a plate, then spread them around a little to make it easy to fill them up. Using tweezers or tiny fingers, pick up a seed and place it on one of the drops of glue. Continue until you've placed seeds on all the glue drops. Let it dry completely. Once your seed tape is dry, you can roll it back onto the cardboard toilet paper tube and store it in a cool, dry place until you're ready to plant. To plant, lay the seed tape on the soil surface, weighing it with a rock or stone to keep the wind from moving it. Cover with soil to the depth recommended on the seed packet. Firm the soil to make sure there's good soil-seed contact. Water with a fine nozzle to avoid washing the soil away. And keep the soil moist until seedlings appear. If starting seeds indoors, you may wish to cover the container with plastic wrap to encourage germination. Now from the Raleigh News and Observer, this article by Nancy Brakey. Crops for cool weather beckon. Fueled by longer days and improving weather, many of us feel the urge to plant. And even though it remains cool, certain crops should go into the ground, either as seeds or young plants in the next few weeks. These are the cool weather vegetables, which play starring roles in the first act of this year's show of edibles. And what a pleasure it is to grow them. For one thing, they are reasonably carefree and productive, with little of the pest and disease problems gardeners encounter with hot weather crops such as squash and tomatoes. Leading the list are spinach, leaf lettuce, mesclun, and snap peas, all easy to grow and worth the small effort they take. March looms, and we could have cold weather again, but these are very hardy crops that should not be damaged by normal late winter weather in the Piedmont. Sow seeds of leaf lettuce, mesclun, and spinach in short rows or small blocks every 10 days or so to keep the harvest going. Sow seeds of snap peas in rows and provide a trellis for taller varieties that climb. Heavy string will work, or a tall chain-link fence. In weeks ahead, as they show up in garden centers, young transplants of cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and cabbage will be ready for planting and good growth through the cool weather of early and mid-spring. Get them planted as soon as available in stores and pay attention to the recommended spacing on the tags. These plants grow large and must have space to develop, typically at least 18 inches apart. Root crops, such as beets, radishes, and carrots, demand cool soil, and there is no danger in planting seeds into March. Onions planted from bulbs should go in the ground before mid-March. Proper thinning and spacing, as recommended on seed envelopes and labels, are just as important for root crops as for the others. Perhaps your vegetable garden has been vacant and quiet since you cleared out the last of the summer crops last fall. If so, a good dig with a fork or space will loosen the soil. Topping the area to be planted with a layer of compost and digging it into the soil will help to enrich the soil. In cool weather, soil does not dry out rapidly, but you must pay attention, especially to areas where seeds are sown and seedlings emerge. These areas should not be allowed to dry out, but they should not be drowned either. Even light moisture is best. Check each day and see how moisture is holding up through these critical weeks. A can or hose with a nozzle that puts out a fine spray at a gentle pace is best. And from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, Allium Millennium is the 2018 Perennial Plant of the Year by Teresa Klesinski. Ornamental onions, alliums, appear to be having their day in the sun. That's good, because these whimsical flowers, which look like purple, pink, or white balls on sticks have much to offer. They're easy to take care of, attract butterflies and other pollinators, and taste bad to rabbits and deer. Their bold silhouettes contrast with the loose, rounded mounds of most perennials, and they are beautiful and interesting to boot. Alliums merit a much bigger place in home gardens. The Perennial Plant Association named an allium Millennium, the 2018 Perennial Plant of the Year. Its flowers are a soft purple. Some alliums send up a single flower per bulb, but Millennium bulbs will clump, sending up multiples. Flower height ranges from 12 to 18 inches with a similar spread. Millennium was chosen for its late flowering with masses of rose-purple blooms, uniform habit with neat, shiny green foliage that remains attractive season-long, and for its drought-resistant constitution. Millennium, with only one N, debuted in 2000. It was bred by horticultural researcher Mark McDonough in Massachusetts. These alliums bloom in July and August after many other plants have petered out. They grow best in sandy soil, though are adaptable to other soil types. What they cannot take is wet soil, which will cause them to rot. Good drainage is essential. Plant bulbs in fall in a location with full sun or afternoon shade in hot climates. After blooming is finished, leave the foliage up to nourish the bulb so it will bloom the next year. Cut it back in the fall. Millennium has no significant pest or disease problems. Some alliums reseed, but Millennium does not. Its seed is sterile. Divide clumps in fall or spring and plant the divisions to get more plants. Millennium looks great paired with goldenrod, Russian sage, or the yellow evening primrose, shimmer. There are about 700 kinds of alliums, including edibles such as garlic, leeks, scallions, and onions. In fact, allium means garlic in Latin. Most ornamental onion flowers have long stems, making them good cut flowers. The foliage and flowers smell like their onion brethren, however, so they are not a good choice for a nosegay. And though they smell edible, ornamental onions should not be eaten. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, Learning to Follow the Sun by Kit Flynn. Several years ago, I gave a presentation at Duke Gardens called Follow the Sun, and I learned a lot about the sun and where it shines during the year. Like all school children, I knew that it rose in the east and set in the west, while vaguely being aware that the winter sun was much lower in the sky than it was in the summer. Other than that, I had never given the sun much thought except to designate some of my areas of my garden as sunny areas and others as shady ones. It turns out that the gardener's sun is a lot more complicated than that. In fact, it rarely rises in the east and sets in the west. This is where the two equinoxes and the two solstices come into play. The equinoxes are those 2 days when daylight and night time are equal in length, typically around March 20, and September 23rd. On these days, the sun really does rise in the east and sets in the west. The solstices occur either when daylight is at its longest, usually around June 21, or when nighttime is at its longest, typically December 21. On these days, the sun begins to reverse its direction. In the summer, the sun rises in the northeast and sets in the northwest. This is the reason you could place a swimming pool in a backyard facing north. In the winter, the opposite is true. The sun rises in the southeast and sets in the southwest. At this time, the north-facing backyard resembles Antarctica. Now, for gardeners in the triangle, this is important knowledge because we have a wide variety of plants that bloom at different times. My north-facing backyard can support two crepe myrtles, which bloom in June, but it cannot nurture a redbud, which blooms in early March. In March, the sun is rising in the east, but the house still casts a large shadow over the backyard, so the redbud, which typically blooms before the surrounding trees leaf out, was still in shadow for most of the day. 3 months later, the northeast rising sun will flood the backyard with light, making the crepe myrtles very happy. Because daylilies wait to bloom until June, this area can also support these sun-loving plants. I cannot grow chrysanthemums in the backyard because their period of bloom is in October, when the sun is moving to its southeast position. The house casts too long a shadow over the backyard. One March, I planted a handsome climbing rose, Cecile Brunner, against the fence in what in March is a sunny area. Now, this rose is a reliable rebloomer, but she only puts on a show for me in early April, then stops. She'll grow long, spectacular canes, but produce no more flowers. What happened? I've forgotten to take into consideration my neighbor's trees, which leaf out in April, blocking out the sun's rays. Cecile gets enough energy from the sun in February and March to put out April blooms, but from then on, she is deprived of the much-needed direct sunlight. In planting our gardens, it's essential to keep movement of the sun in mind. We need to know when our plants will bloom so we can give them the necessary sunlight 8 weeks ahead of that bloom cycle. My north-facing backyard supports sun-loving plants provided they bloom between late May and late August. Because this area is brilliantly lit during this period, the backyard cannot support shade-loving plants except for those that go completely dormant in the summer, such as hellebores. So remember the movement of the sun. December 21, winter solstice, has the sun beginning its long trek from the southeast, rising to the northeast rising. March 20, equinox, has sun rising in the east. By June 21st, summer solstice, the sun is at its northeasternmost point and is now reversing its direction. And on September 23rd, equinox, the sun is again rising in the east and setting in the west. Remember this, and you will find that it's easier to accommodate and understand the needs of your plants. And that, in the words of Martha, is a good thing. And garden goings on, the 23rd Annual Hellebore Festival, still going on March the 9th and the 10th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. See hellebores on display and for sale at Pine Knot Farms. You can call 434 252-1990, 434-252-1990 for more information. And from State by State Gardening website, on March 11th in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, identifying and controlling invasive plants at North Carolina Botanical Garden. So NCBG Land Manager Neville Handel will teach participants how to identify and combat invasive plants in their landscapes from 1:30 until 4:30 p.m. The cost is $32 or $29 for members, and registration is required. For more information, call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. And a Growing in Place symposium, Friday, March 16th, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Nature Research Center at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. The 11th Annual Natural Learning Initiative, theme Urban Nature by Design, applying biophilic design to restore biodiversity to cities. Planning urban green/blue infrastructure to engage children and families. Managing urban habitats to maximize play and learning opportunities. Ensuring culturally equitable nature experiences. Attendees, public or private sector practitioners, landscape architects, planners, parks and recreation professionals, teachers and environmental educators, citizen activists and elected officials, and all professions that work to create urban environments in support of healthy human development. Oh, and here's from Great Gardening Gizmos by Rodale. Garden lights. An easy, inexpensive way to add evening light involves large glass containers, explains Melinda Rizzo, who gardens in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Mayonnaise jars, as well as industrial strength pickle and hot pepper jars, work great. The bigger the better, says Rizzo. Soak off the label and rinse the jars clean. Pour 2 to 3 inches of sand in the jar. Then insert a white pillar candle. Use these inexpensive garden lights on the garden at night to line a brick path. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until the next time. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.